Yo, what's up? 1510 WMEX. It's New England Soccer Weekly. And, well, did you think we'd be in this situation 3 months ago? Well, if you said yes, you're probably lying to yourself right now. I don't even know if I would have predicted this a couple of months ago. But, hey, it's the New England Revolution, and it's the New York Red Bulls, and it's in just a little more than 3 hours away from Gillette Stadium that's already buzzing with a football atmosphere. No, not the pigskin with a guy that wears number 12. He'll play tomorrow night in Green Bay. We're talking about the pelota. New England Soccer Weekly again. I'm Tom Quinlan. Sean Donahue, Justin Churchill, leading you up until 1 o'clock. And we'll have a full preview today of the Eastern Conference Finals leg number 2 and the Western Conference Finals leg number 2. And maybe talk a little Barclays Premier League as well. So, and maybe have a guest. I don't know. I'm still putting this show together as we work live. It's okay. It's radio. It's a lot easier than writing.
There's a lot of lot to talk about today, so we don't even need to worry about
it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we could go for 3 hours today, I think, if we had to.
We could, but no.
A little bit different on the AM dial. But, hey. We are happy and we're very excited. Leading 2-1, just because, and it's not, we're not leading 2-1. No. We're just excited to be a part of this momentous day today. Two historic franchises. You know, leading 2-1, coming back to Foxborough in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Revs, you know, really have a lot that they can be proud of here. And it's going to be a hell of a game. I mean, we could just start right there. Even though Bradley Wright Phillips will not be playing in this game for yellow card accumulation, the Golden Boot winner, the guy that equalized in the game last week for New York, down 1-0, they don't have their go-to man. It's going to be on the foot of Tim Cahill to really get it done today. And, you know, guys, just take it from here. Let's start off with that main storyline. What do you do if you're New York?
Thierry Henry is finally going to play in front of me at Gillette Stadium.
You know, I want to know why, I mean, not to change the topic, I want to know why Jameson Olave didn't get any of the same crap that Thierry Henry got for not playing. But, you know, nobody was asking him if he was playing. But I'm Bradley Wright Phillips. You know, you look at how he's played over the past few games. Yeah. His finishing has been bad. You know, I mean, obviously you're going to miss him. He's a guy who gets in great positions. Very close. And I think Jermaine Jones was very close too. I think both of those goals were very, very borderline. And I think the right call was made in both cases because I don't know. I mean, we didn't get a good enough angle, I think, on either of those to say for sure. But I will say this. Bradley Wright Phillips, I don't think, has been at his best lately. I think his finishing has been bad. I think he should have scored more goals than he did so far in the playoffs. But they're going to miss him. I don't think Tim Cahill's been great this year. That's why he's been on the bench. So it's definitely a very different player coming in to replace him. A quality player who scored a fantastic goal at the World Cup, but who since then really hasn't been playing that well. So it's going to be interesting to see how that changes up things because, you know, they need to score and they need to score early.
I think it's going to go one of two ways today. I think if Cahill and Thierry Henry can show up and, you know, be the superstars that they've always been, then they're in a good situation. But I think if that doesn't happen, it's going to be a very big blowout. I think the Revs can just easily take advantage if they don't show up
right
and play well.
I think I agree, but I agree to a certain extent because I feel like where the Red Bulls could fall into this that trap where you're talking about, Justin, I think the Revs could fall into those same traps as well if you're not getting those same offensive guys going. You know, I've been listening to a lot of reporters talk this week, and I've listened to a lot of radio hosts. Yeah, they actually do that now. We've been doing it since January. We've heard a lot of radio hosts talk this week about just the matchups. And to be honest, right now, at this point in the game, even though New England's got that very important lead coming back here to Gillette, they got two goals in New York, so massive. It's nothing. It's still. It's not like it doesn't mean anything. I shouldn't say that, but there is a lot of pressure still on New England, as much as there is New York right now.
Absolutely. That's the name of the game. But they've done well in the last series.
Oh, absolutely.
It wasn't as much of a thing, but they still came out and they played well against Columbus in the home leg of that. I think an important situation that needs to be brought up, and we didn't really have a chance to talk about this because I was on post game or anything last week.
Sure.
The refereeing of the last game was, in my opinion, really bad.
10 yellow cards, the most in a playoff game ever, I think I saw. Correct, Sean?
I think so. I mean, I don't know the exact stat there, but most I can remember ever sitting at a playoff game. Certainly most without a red card being handed out, I would say for sure.
Exactly. And why does that need to happen? Like, why can't you let them play in the playoffs? Like, it's just... to me, it's kind of putting an asterisk on the series.
I think, to be fair though, there were opportunities where he could have given second yellow cards that he didn't. Mm-hmm. I think Jermaine Jones was flirting with a second yellow card all day.
Richard Eckersley was flirting with like eight red cards.
As was he. Yeah. I think on both sides, the referee could have handed out a red card at some point and didn't. So you got to give him some credit for restraint there. But I do agree it was a little too quick with the yellow card. There were some yellow cards that he gave out though that I thought were borderline red cards. So I think in that case you can again give him some red card there. Some credit there for not giving out a red card. But it's going to be a very interesting leg tonight. The good news is that the yellow cards don't carry over to the MLS Cup, so if somebody gets a second yellow today, they can play with that freedom. So really, the only one affected was Bradley Wright Phillips by all those yellows. So on that note, it worked out well for the Revolution. But going back to how it went with the Columbus here, I think we saw in the second, like, the Revs didn't come out all that sharp at the beginning. Columbus had some pressure on them early. They didn't put any of their chances away, but had they, that series still would have been in the Revs' favor because of how big of a lead. Tonight, one goal for New York begins to put a lot of pressure on the Revolution. The margin of error tonight is not as big as it was against Columbus. So if they do start poorly and New York is able to take advantage of that, then the series can change quite quickly.
I think, with that being said, the same situation. If they go down and they give up a goal in the first half, it's going to be a rough night for New England. It's going to be a rough night.
You think so?
I don't think New York's going to let them set up the counterattack. I think they learned their lesson a couple times on that. They know this team.
You can't let them play the long ball over top.
No. And the problem for New York is we go back to Bradley Wright Phillips. He is a speedy guy that they can put up front, and that's what
tall.
They're gonna be lacking tonight, especially if the Revs get any sort of pressure to start. But
to go back to the Revs' point that you were just talking about, if they allow that 1-0 goal early, they'll be in trouble. The thing that, and to Sean's point before about Columbus not starting out necessarily on the front foot, and I don't know if I completely all agree, and here's why. It's because I think when they're able to adjust, and earlier in the season, and I'm betting we're going to see this tonight if they need to, the Revs' wings were able to interchange. And that's what made that attack so good, is that you had a guy like Diego and Teal being comfortable on playing on either sides of the wing, a complimentary piece and a good piece, whether it was Patrick Mullins or Charlie Davies up top to create havoc for center backs, and then obviously Lee Wynn. The Revs were able to do that against Columbus, which I think allowed that Lee Wynn opening goal in that game. So tonight, it depends, I think, more so, and maybe, I want to get your thoughts on this, how the Revs interchange on those wings. Do you think who here's the better question. Who do you think will have an easier job adjusting tonight on in this weather, in these conditions, on this turf?
New England. They play on turf, and they practice probably all week on turf. I haven't been at training, but Sean,
I have not been at training this week either. But
they're probably to playing on turf. There is a different thing, and they have a good advantage at home. There's also probably going to be a lot of people in the stands tonight, and it's going to be freezing too. So it's going to be a less fluid game, more meat and potatoes.
See, that's what's made these teams so good though, and what's gotten them to this point is that they're able to play a fluid style of a game. Both teams are they play a similar formation. Mm-hmm. They play a 4-2-3-1. Both teams will come out with that tonight. So, maybe now the next question is, who do you think will have a more fluid game then?
I just want to, not going back too far, but I just want to say, against the Columbus Crew, the first 5 minutes, Columbus had 3 shots, 4 crosses, Revolution passed 57%, Crew 87%. And that's what I'm talking about, is that you don't want to have happen tonight. If a team does that, and I think New York is capable of doing that, we've seen them have some good possession spells. And I think if the Revs come out flat, then New York can do that, create one chance, and if they score that goal again, it changes everything. But, like Justin was saying, the Revolution are used to playing on turf. Thierry Henry hasn't played on turf in years. Jameson Olave doesn't
All-Star
play
game.
On turf
played
often
on
at all. Except for the All-Star game, which is surprising. But
he was training.
But I don't think that will give him too much benefit going into this game. So, this is the Revolution's game to take control of. They just can't come out, thinking that they have a 2-1 lead. playing poorly to begin with, which they did against Columbus. They did adjust, as you said, but you know, had they given up a goal early, that adjustment might have been a little bit different and not worked out as well as it did. So it's all about getting off to a good start. We know they're capable of doing that, but we also know they've had games where, you know, sometimes they start pretty slowly, and I think that's been, if there's one knock on this team throughout the year, and even down when they've been playing well, is that they've started a lot of games slowly. They've managed to recover from it. You know, we saw that stretch where they won several games after falling behind early, but this is a night where it could become a very difficult night, as Justin said, if they get off to a slow start.
We're live at 617-237-1234. 617-237-1234 here at Gillette Stadium this evening. Real quick before we go to break, we'll go to break around 18 or 19 here. Who's to blame more so? I know you got the referee. You said it right there. The refereeing really affected that game. Mm-hmm. But who do you blame more for Bradley Wright Phillips getting that second yellow where he's not playing in this game tonight? Are you blaming Petke? Are you blaming Wright Phillips? Or is it all on the referee for just making an egregious call and probably knowing the situation that, hey, MLS's golden boot winner has, you know, a yellow card here. I gotta watch myself. Because I've talked to a lot of people that I've put this all on the referee.
I think that's nuts. It's the right call.
I disagree.
The rule says you can't impede the goalkeeper when he's throwing the ball.
He was rolling the ball out. It's different than impeding a goalie when he's kicking the ball.
I mean, even when you're throwing or rolling the ball out, you can't impede the goalkeeper. So I think it's a pretty obvious. I think it's an obvious yellow card. I think it's completely on Petke. Petke has to know that situation. I have no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, Jay Heap said to Gonsalves before last game, it was the one Revolution player on yellow card. You know, you're on yellow card. Don't get another one. Gonsalves didn't commit a foul all game, and he's a guy that we know certainly does lunge in a tackle sometimes, commits fouls. Didn't do it. I think Heaps did the right thing. I'm sure he was told based on how he played that game.
Yeah.
Petke absolutely should have told Bradley Wright Phillips. He said after the game that he didn't want to change their style of play. But especially for a striker like that, it shouldn't change their style of play that much to tell them that they're playing on a yellow card. They don't have to commit stupid fouls in the positions that Bradley Wright Phillips is playing. Some of the blame still goes to Bradley Wright Phillips. No reason at all for him to do what he did. Boneheaded play. I think you heard Steve Nichol talking about it on ESPN FC and basically pointed out it was a complete boneheaded play, and I think he blamed Petke a little bit as well. But no excuse for that. Most of the blame falls on Petke.
I just disagree on the fact that it was, yes, probably on a yellow card you wouldn't do that, but the rules of the game, the ball was out of his hand and already rolling in a path, and he stepped into the path. And real time, yeah, you're probably going to get called on that, but he didn't physically impede the goalie. He didn't physically impede Shuttleworth. Shuttleworth rolled the ball out. He saw the ball was rolling. I mean, it was about a foot, less than a foot, whatever you want to say, but it was rolling. If a ball's rolling to you, you can run up and grab that ball as long as you're not getting in the way of Bobby Shuttleworth. And that's where I had an issue with that call being a yellow card. Call it a foul. Don't give me a yellow card for it.
But here's my thing, because you talk about it by the book. There's been nothing
nobody
by the book.
Nobody follows the book in refereeing.
But even more so in this playoffs, you could say that the rules have gone out the window. Go back to the Seattle-Dallas game, where Dallas probably could have drew two penalties in that match. Same thing with Seattle in the same circumstances. Fine. The knockout round game between Vancouver and Dallas. I mean, these...
The Salt Lake LA first leg where both teams scored goals that were onside and correctly called offside.
So the point is here that the refereeing has been suspect all playoffs long. So why should we expect anything different in this round?
Good point. I think that's a good point. Who's the referee today? I haven't looked at the
I believe it's Toledo, right?
Yeah, Toledo.
Toledo! Yeah, I mean, I would like Geiger today. That would have been nice. Geiger must be doing the other game.
Geiger doing the second leg here at Gillette? Didn't he do that game here
for
at Gillette?
Columbus?
Yeah.
I think so.
And I think there was those complaints about the way he handled that game, too.
I think he's the best referee.
I mean, there's going to be...
Well, there's a reason why he's a World Cup referee.
There's going to be complaints no matter who's refereeing the game, I think. There's,
obviously.
Whether they're good complaints or biased complaints is another story, but no matter who's refereeing the game, there's got to be complaints from somebody.
With these two coaches, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of complaints about the refereeing. Yeah.
You saw them last week. They were bickering on the sideline.
That's all they do.
Well, there were so many fouls last week where both coaches were furious and for different reasons yelling at the referee. But you're not both right.
Cup game from last year, I remember covering Revs Red Bulls at Harvard Stadium, standing right above, because, you know, press doesn't get as much... we're standing right above the coaches, essentially, like 2 feet away.
Right.
I can't even repeat the stuff they were saying to each other. They don't like each other, and they're both the same style of coach.
I thought the way to best describe the way everything went the other day, Petke's, and it describes New York and New England and his attitudes in a nutshell. Petke's flipping out. Jay Heaps is trying to keep his head as cool as possible with a cheeky smile. And you know what? It's just going to get even more explosive today on the sidelines.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's actually Jair Marufo doing the Western Conference final. So where is Mark Geiger these days?
That's interesting. Maybe
he's just waiting for the final.
There you go.
Maybe.
L.A. or Seattle. Who's going to go there? New York or New England? We'll talk more about that next on New England Soccer Weekly. It's 617-237-1234.
Hi, Leif Erickson for Snow Country, brought to you by Smuggler's Notch Vermont, America's family resort. Three interconnected mountains with award-winning children's programs, family fun guaranteed. The ski season is off to a fast start with that fresh snow that led us into the weekend. Plenty of nearby mountains are open, so you don't have to go far to get your first runs of the season in. The big northern resorts already look like Christmas with a foot of fresh snow and some big, cold, productive snowmaking carrying us into this weekend. Wachusett Mountain with around half a dozen runs as they're open for the season. New Hampshire resorts popping up all over with Crotchet Mountain, Mount Sunapee, Waterville Valley all open for the season. Loon Mountain, 12 miles of terrain. Cannon Mountain got over a foot of snow from that storm, so great setup for the weekend with 9 runs. In Vermont, Mount Snow has plenty of nice smooth blue cruisers. They picked up 13 inches from that storm, around 12 runs led into the weekend. Their Bluebird Chair open and Killington skiing 17 miles. More at snowcountry.com. Leif Erickson for 1510 WMEX.
There are kids in this country who didn't have a parent at their baseball games or recitals because their parents were serving in faraway places. But now they're coming home, and Wounded Warrior Project assists them through the Warriors to Work program.
My mom used to be a tank programmer. Now she works with computers. I'm really glad she's home because I can't eat my dad's marshmallow macaroni anymore.
To support the Warriors to Work program, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Are you looking for an authentic Italian meal in an intimate setting? Then you'll want to dine at Terra Mia's. This North End Italian restaurant provides a simply divine culinary experience and, as quoted in Zagat's restaurant guide, pastas without compare. And it's reasonably priced. This North End gem will keep you coming back. Terra Mia is simply the best Italian restaurant in all of Boston. Call 617-523-3112, 617-523-3112, or terramiarestaurante.com.
JP3 Graphics in Weymouth is helping you out with all your custom graphic needs, specializing in custom vinyl stickers, motocross graphics, truck lettering, vehicle wraps, landscaping signs, and more. When you need something designed and printed, call JP3 Graphics and they can do it for you, giving you the professional look you need without the high cost. Call JP3 Graphics today and mention this ad. The setup is free. 781-264-5214. That's 781-264-5214.
Hey, Nick Cannon here. So we all know we've got a lot of talent in America. But unfortunately, there's something else we've got way too much of. Childhood hunger. 17 million kids struggle with it in this country. That's why the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks gather surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right, 1510 WMEX. Welcome back to New England Soccer Weekly. I'm Tom Quinlan, Sean Donahue, and Justin Churchill, as always, in studio with us here live at Gillette Stadium today. And you can call us at 617-237-1234. Chris Landry back on the ones and twos, producing it live for you. Landry, what's up, buddy?
How you doing, Tommy?
Yeah, I know it's a little bit different. We're not with you today back in Quincy.
I know. It's all cold and frigid back here. I don't have the good
the warmth
of
my voice to keep you company.
It's like you're talking to ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, thank you very much for, you know what, just being awake. Thank you for being awake today and not falling asleep during the show, man.
You got it, man. It's a struggle, but I'm here. I'm with you.
It's the conference finals. Wake up.
Oh, well, that'll wake you up.
See, that's the thing. I don't understand why all of a sudden now there's this hype. Now there's all this coverage. Now everybody...
It's New England. That's what they do.
Let me get this out. there is a just a dis. It's not disgusting, and I don't want to say it's disgraceful, but like you could tell the people that, and it's not mainstream that I'm just talking about. It's everybody. You can tell the people that are doing their homework and paying attention to what's going on, and then you just listen to the ones that just riffraff and try to tell you what is really good with the New England Revolution here over the past 5 months. And oh, this is what happened back in the day. And oh, I know, I was there watching. It's just I was never brought in the same way. Well, you know what? You're the problem with growing American soccer.
Well, I mean, I think the Revs have done. I'll give them credit. I will give the Revolution front office a lot of credit this year. They realize they have a good team. They realize it's time.
But didn't you realize that last year? Here's the thing. Obviously, Jermaine is Jermaine. There's no need to explain what Jermaine has done. But go back last year, and I want to go back to, well, think about what Juan did. Think about what Juan Agudelo did to this team and how, you know, this was a team that had a pretty good start. They were pretty decent through the summer. They were good enough to get into the playoffs, but they had that one key guy to put them over the top. And what made it bad and what made it hurt so much is that you lost to Kansas City in the semifinals, so you couldn't continue that momentum. Now you got a little bit of different flavor here because you're in the conference finals this year for the first time since 2007. And all of a sudden, there's more of this heightened awareness.
I think going into the season, there wasn't the extreme excitement because you'd lost Juan Agudelo, you'd lost Matt Reese, you'd lost two key guys from last year's team, and you hadn't, I mean, at least on paper, it didn't look like you'd adequately replaced either of them heading into the season.
But go ahead.
They started off okay. I think they started off better than people expected. They had that little, I believe it was a 5-game winning streak early on, and then completely collapsed around the World Cup time where they lost 8 games in a row. I believe their longest losing streak ever, and that was disastrous, and I think interest probably at that point was at a big low before they brought in Jermaine Jones and really turned the season around. But I can't blame people for not being all that excited going into the season, despite how last year ended, because they lost such two such key guys and didn't really replace them. End up turning things around, working out. Charlie Davies really came on strong, stepped up in Juan Agudelo's absence. Bobby Shuttleworth really came on strong as the season went on. But if you look at where this team was in March, I can't blame people for not being all that excited based on who was lost from the previous year and based on the lack of any key offseason additions.
Fair. And Justin, I'll let you get your point in 1 second. But the only gripe I have with that is this. If you're a diehard fan, even if you're an everyday media member who comes in and sees the practices and sees the training, people didn't see the potential of Bobby Shuttleworth, a guy that won you half your games last year. The Revs had 14 wins. Bobby had 7 of those wins. I don't care how bad his, and just a stat that sticks out the most, I don't care how bad his distribution numbers are. At the end of the day, the numbers that matter the most are the win numbers, aren't they?
Well, I think you saw problems with him beyond that at the beginning of the season and last year where he struggled with long shots. I think he's cleaned that up a little bit. He struggled with giving up some very bad rebounds that we've seen, and I think he's cleaned that up. I mean, he gave up some against New York last leg, but a lot of those were very difficult saves. But we saw some more routine saves that he was giving up rebounds, and those are things that he improved on. But at the start of the season, I think there were a lot of question marks with Bobby Shuttleworth.
And to add to the point of Bobby Shuttleworth, he has actually grown a little bit this year because actually his defense is not as good as it was last year. In my opinion, the defense is not as good as it was last year. And I mean, that might be because, Joko's situation at the beginning of the year, but he's doing all right now. AJ's kind of stepping up in his absence, but he's still not the same player. He's still not the MLS defender of the year like he was last year. That was their focal point last year. They weren't as creative and offensive last year as they are this year, and their defense was way better.
Right. The defense is a huge key of it because Jose did a great job in, first off, grooming a stud of a right back now in Andrew Farrell. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a monster and a beast, and I'll get to him in a minute.
Although he's had his struggles this year, too.
Mm-hmm. But he also played 31 games this year. People give him crap, and sure, he's got maybe he lacks in certain technical areas, which is why he sits behind DeAndre Yedlin in the U.S. men's national team depth chart a little bit, and I'm not trying to anger the guy here, but he's proven to me, especially in a game where there was 10 yellow cards. This is what sticks out the most to me. In a game where there's 10 yellow cards last week, he's a guy with his body makeup, his physical makeup. He's built like a horse. He doesn't get a yellow card for an aggressive tackle. He doesn't step out of his lines. He's grown. You know what I mean? And maybe the defense is not as good, but the chemistry is there. The link-up is there. And the guys, you know, have the right mentality. They might not have the great physical play. Jose's not Jose from last year, and he's not going to – and a lot of it probably had to do with what he was expecting to get from outside offers coming into the year. That's what it is. I'm not afraid to say it. And it's at the point where he fell behind, he got hurt, and the defense needed to find its identity. And to be honest, it did with Andrew and AJ at the, in the middle. They saved that defense for most of the year.
I think Farrell was at his best at center back this year. I think at his right back, he's had his struggles this year. I thought he was had a little bit of a sophomore slump through much of the season. He's come on better towards the end of the year, but there were times this year where I thought he was the weak link of the defense, as good as he was last year. When he played center back, he was great. When he played right back this year, early on in the season, I didn't think he was playing all that well. Now he is. Now when they really need him, he's playing much, much better. But there were certainly times this year where he has not been the most consistent player in that back line. And I think throughout the back line, consistency has been a bit of an issue this year. I think AJ Soares has probably been their most consistent defender throughout the year, but elsewhere is where you've had some question marks. I think they're playing a lot better now than they were earlier this year, but that as you said, last year, defense was huge for this team. This year, it's a lot more about this team scoring a lot of goals, keeping the pressure off their defense. Against New York, it was more of a bend-don't-break type of thing where Shuttleworth had to make a lot of big saves to keep that score line where it was, but the defense is the issue this season.
Let's go to 617-237-1234. Phone lines open. John and Ken, what's up, John?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing today?
John.
Hello?
John going once.
Hi.
John going twice.
I was wondering, what do you guys think we need to do today?
Okay, John's gone.
We have some people listening out right now, though. That's good.
Oh, he was on?
We couldn't hear him.
We can't. You know what, Chris? I can't hear him. Can you make sure I can hear the phone in my ear, please? I can't hear the phones.
Hello?
You got to we just is both programs on?
Hello?
John, if you're listening right now, I apologize, but if you could please call back, 617-237-1234. The board is technical stuff. You know what I mean?
It's okay. Let's talk about soccer.
The dangers of doing remotes.
What were you saying?
In the bowels of Gillette Stadium, so it's awesome. But yeah,
it is
people
awesome.
Listening.
And we got football on in the background of us right now.
Oh, finally! Oh, good. We were watching cartoons for a while. So, you know, driving in, meeting Tom outside the stadium today, we saw quite a few people there pretty early on the tailgate
lot.
Lots of buses.
All the Revs fans are listening to us today, and shout out to Liz and Jimmy driving down, listening to the show. They texted me, and it's a pretty exciting atmosphere out there.
You know, it's great. I mean, first off, though, you saw Riders and Rebellion and Rev Army and Rev Ultras getting out there early this morning. they're all where they usually are. But you know what? It grows this time of year.
Yeah.
There's more people. There's more interested. This is, to be honest, this was from a on-field play point, it wasn't perfect. It was far from perfect. Do I hype it up and make it sound a hell of a lot better than it really was? Yes, I do. But the point is to bring in these people this time of year, to bring in the newbies, hey, listen, that's a 90s kid word right there. To bring in these generational kids that I'm walking down the stairs from Dunkin' Donuts. Manchester United and Hull City are playing on the CBS Scene Jumbotron. These are kids 12, 13 years old. Now, granted, they have soccer stuff on, but I'll tell you right now, I'm 23 years old. 10 years ago, there were not kids my age that had any idea what Hull City's colors were, yet alone what Hull City was. 10 kids all said, oh, look, that's Man United versus Hull City.
Yeah, they'd be like Hull. You wouldn't even say the city part. Probably, if they looked at the top line.
It was a lot harder to find these games on TV back then.
Good old Fox Soccer.
But it's just like, you know, you they're setting the right atmosphere and they're setting the right tone here in Foxborough today. I'm not trying to be shrill. I'm not trying to be anything more than I need to be. I don't work for the Crafts. I don't work for this organization. I'm just simply a mouthpiece for soccer fans in this area. And looking out on the scenes today, you said it perfectly. The atmosphere is excellent right now. There is just a vibe in the air that makes you think, like, holy crap. This is something special. You know, you've seen historic games. You grew up going to some great games. I came from New York, so I didn't get to embrace it the same way you guys did. I'm an adopted son of New England. And to be honest, even as an outsider looking in, this just feels like the biggest game in this in this, in at least recent memory. 617-237-1234. We got John in Canton who's back on the line. John, sorry about that.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
You sound great, John.
Great. So I was just wondering, in the first leg, Lee Nguyen, besides the counterattack, which led to the second goal, which was beautiful, he was kind of absent in that game. How do we get him more involved today?
Well, I think one of the keys in that game was that the Rebels did a very good job of stopping him, especially when Eric Alexander was out there. Dax McCarty, Eric Alexander did a great job of watching over Lee Nguyen, and I think that's what opened up. I mean, in addition to Roy Miller being out, opened up so much space in the wings for Teal Bunbury, where you saw Bunbury, you know, very involved both on the second goal, setting it up with the assist, and on his amazing first goal. So it's a, you know, it's a good question. How do you get Lee Nguyen more involved? But just the fact that he was drawing so much attention, I think, opened up for other players. So, you know, can he break out of that more? I don't know. Are the Rebels, I think, are going to have to adjust this game because they need to score badly. So I think there will be more openings for Lee Nguyen just inherently based on how the Rebels have to adjust their tactics. But it wasn't necessarily the worst thing that Lee Nguyen wasn't the most involved last game because he was just drawing so much attention. And I think it was clear from the Red Bulls' comments after the game that, you know, he was a focal point for them defensively. And that's why other players were more open.
To Sean's point, I think that Lee Nguyen, they can't double Lee Nguyen this game. So I think by choice, he is going to get more opportunities, and he has to be the one that takes the most advantage of those chances. And he's very capable of doing that. You've seen him do that in games throughout the season where people give him that space and he takes it. He makes that change. He makes that, you know, that the quick movement to get on his, you know, his right foot, or he can make that link up pass, and maybe Charlie Davies, you know, gets on the end of a couple goals today. That is where, you know, you stretch out your defense, you stretch out your midfield because you're looking to score a goal. So that's, you know, that's how he's going to get open today.
John, anything else before we let you go?
Yeah, sure. One quick off-topic one. Will Chelsea lose this year, you guys think?
Absolutely not.
got Justin with his bias over there. You know, I think they're
watching them right now.
They'll slip up at some point this season, but they are going to win the championship.
Right. I'm praying right now that Sunderland sneak one.
John, who do you support?
I'm a West Ham United fan.
I respect that too. I respect that.
Fair enough. Hey, Johnny. Yeah, John, enjoy the game today, all right?
All right, bye.
Speaking of Lee Nguyen,
almost.
Uh-oh. Sunderland. Uh-oh.
That was almost an own goal, Tommy.
Still, it's a goal is a goal, right?
Yeah. Score on yourself.
Wait a minute. You know what? I'm thinking that's Courtois. That's Castle Pans Lindemann.
He does look just like him, though, does he?
Not really. Maybe.
He's tall, lanky.
Tall, lanky. There you go. Speaking of Lee Nguyen, though, Seth Maycomber from the Bent Musket had an interesting article posted. What was it, this morning, I think? Yeah, this morning. Lee Nguyen's getting some looks from English clubs. One's in the Premiership, one's very high in the Premiership right now, and the other one is Fulham, which is not...
Fulham America, no, that
which
would be
is
the
not
best.
In the Premiership.
That would be the best.
You don't think Southampton would be better considering where they are right now?
Considering they're actually in the Premiership.
And they're contending, technically.
Fulham is not contending that much this year in Championship, but I have a soft spot in my heart for them. But, yes...
As most Americans do.
Next year, and he's at that age where he needs to get going if he's going to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess Southampton would be better. Would he get as much playing time at Southampton? I don't know. He'd have to work his way out. It's a fresh new start. He would get more playing time at Fulham, but he'd be playing in the Championship for 1 year at least. So, yeah, I mean...
What do you got to say about Onley possibly getting looks from Southampton?
I think he'll be back next year. I think he likes it here. I think...
He's not getting paid, man.
I think he'll get paid. Especially if he wins MLS MVP. You know, the CBA, I don't know how that's going to change things.
Yeah, we're not going to have a season next year.
You know, that could happen. But I think he'll be back. I'm not too... I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to be leaving. He's 28. He's had a great year this year. He's been over in Europe before and hasn't had as much success as you would expect from a player of his quality. I think he likes it here. I expect him to be back next year. I'd like to see more credible rumors than this, too, before I go too far into it, because I don't think that it's the most credible sources so far from
We can speculate after December. Because, depending on how contract money goes and all that stuff goes, we'll see how it goes. Happens with Lee at the end of the year, and depending on what ownership wants to do.
It's not a Juan Aguadelo situation. Let's put that way.
I took him in FIFA 15. I took Sunderland because I wanted to bring them from the bowels of the Premier League to the top. And I took him and I put him on my team. And he's one of the best players in the Premier League. So, just saying.
All right.
If it happens in FIFA, right?
Well, you know what? Speaking of midfielders that could replace Lee Nguyen when he goes, Kellen Rowe. guy that even last week, as we talk about, you know, John talked about obsolete guys for New England. Kellen didn't have the most explosive and Kellen Rowe performances that we've been accustomed to. And granted, this is a kid that got hurt midseason, you know, had to work his ass off to get back into the rotation and found himself as an outside winger, converted outside winger this year in a converted 4-2-3-1 formation in Jay Heaps. Thank you very much, Jermaine Jones. Is he good to go for today, you think? He was getting beat up by Richard Eckersley a lot the other day. A couple playoff games here where Kellen Rowe really has not, I wouldn't say not done much. He created that assist on the Charlie Davies goal in Columbus on the opening goal. But since then, fairly quiet. So what do you got to say about that?
There's no question in my mind that Kellen Rowe is better as a central midfielder than out on the wings. And I think you're seeing that in his performances. You know, I think he's a capable winger. He's, you know, considering who the Revolution's other options are out on the wing, considering what Fagundes has done this year or what he hasn't done this year, I think Kellen Rowe is your best option out there. I think it's probably their best 11 is what Jay Heaps is putting out there. But there's no question in my mind that Kellen Rowe is a better player in central midfield. If he'd been playing there, I think we'd see more out of him. But he's doing a good job considering he's playing out of position. Whether we see more from him this game or not is another question. I think, as we mentioned last week with Roy Miller out, there's places to exploit on the wings. When he's switching up with Teal Bunbury, I think especially when he's on the right, he'll have those opportunities to exploit Oyongo on the right wing. So will we see that from him today is another question. But he'll have those chances. The opportunity is there for him to have a big game today, I think, the way this game will play out. So we'll see what goes down. But I have no question going forward that, you know, central midfield is the position that he's the most comfortable in and that he can do the most for this team long term.
How does he affect today's game, though? How does Kellen Rowe affect the game for New England today? And Justin, what do you think he needs to do to create havoc and open up that space for Lee Wynn?
I think he needs to work the wing and find,
stay wide.
Yes, find space out there, right?
Do you think they got too congested at times last week versus New York?
I do, and I think they need to do the same thing with Teal. I think both of them need to just spread it out a little wider. Maybe not. They're not the people say. You know, the Revs don't have the best crossing.
I don't care
what anyone says.
There's no debate about
that. There's one person on the team who's really good at crossing, and he plays left back. But the rest of it is, you know, finding those players like Wynn and Jermaine can go off to, I'm using my hands here, but they can go off to the tops of the 18, the corners, the edges of the boxes, and find the short passes, and then find, you know, Charlie Davies making a darting run inside the box or something like that. That's how they do it, short passes but wider. So they use the width. They can throw in the crosses. They might as well. I mean, they're not bad at it. They're just not amazing at it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, no, it's very true that, you know, crossing isn't their strength. I think the last game they only attempted 11 crosses, which is a very, very low number, below their season average, which I believe was 16th, which was 16 crosses per game, which is already 18th out of 19 in MLS. But, you know, even without the crosses, you saw Teal Bunbury cut inside in his man. You know, he was out on the wing, had that space, cut inside, put in that fantastic left-footed shot. You know, that play developed on the wing.
Amazing
goal. Saw him get forward on the wing again on their late goal, be it on a counterattack where there was much more space everywhere at that point. But, you know, it's just, even if you can't cross it, you can open up spaces on the wing. And I think Kellen Rowe at times is capable of crossing the ball, especially when he's on his right foot. Again, nowhere near as consistently as Tierney, and still probably not as good as you'd hope to have out of some of your wingers. That's another area where Kellen Rowe can affect the game, is if he can get forward and send in some dangerous crosses and, you know, set himself up to put in good service, that can make a huge impact on this game.
Justin, any final thoughts?
I have an interesting thing to think about here. Who's going to be in the 18 today? Because when you're stretching teams out, you're going to want some speed off the bench. Who do you guys think is going to be coming off the bench?
I think you don't have much speed options off the bench. You have, you know, Kevin Austin defensively who's brought in the speed, and that worked out as a late game sub. You have Fagundes that has some speed that can come off the bench. But other than that, I'm not really sure who your speed guys are on the bench this year. I think that's one area where this team doesn't have a lot of. Well, who knows how fast Jeffrey Castillon is, because we haven't seen much of him.
Well, here's my counter with why I think you don't need speed, though, because you have bodies with a guy like Daigo Kobayashi, who's experienced and veteran enough that, and the thing about this midfield too that we're not talking about is you have holding midfielders that have played so good over the last month and a half. And that's led by a guy like Scott Caldwell. You know, you don't need the speed because you're so strong in that area.
To counter the ball, you're going to need some sort of
speed.
Well,
I think you
have
the players.
That's where the teal comes in.
I think you have the players to and Charlie Davies, but I think you have the players to hold the lead that you're bringing off the bench. For sure. There's no question in my mind you have good guys that can help hold on the lead off the bench. If they fall behind, then you have a little bit more questions on who comes off the bench and what works out there. But, you know, for the Revs' sake, hopefully they avoid that scenario and, you know, manage to hold on to this lead, add to the lead potentially like they did against Columbus and hopefully are cruising late in the game. And who knows, maybe Sharvick Joseph makes the 18 because he's off the injury report. So.
He is. Nobody was on the injury report this week for the Revs. 617-237-1234. We're going to be commercial free until 12:57 today. So just call in, sound off with us. We're not going anywhere for the next 13 minutes. We got Chelsea and Sunderland on the back screen right here. You can't cut away from this stuff today.
It's too exciting.
It really is. And I just saw Bilello tweet this out. Actually, he tweeted it out 46 minutes ago. They've already guaranteed over 30,000 today.
Wow.
That's good.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Cold. It's cold out there, and they're breaking their playoff record that they set 2 weeks ago. So.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't say, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but you can't say enough about the traveling fan support at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal atmosphere at that game.
What was that like?
To me, it was the best atmosphere I've experienced at a game in America. I've been to a game in England, and it was right up there. It was right up there with the best atmospheres I've experienced. The Riders' Rebellion, everyone who traveled and you know, sitting in the Revolution section in full voice all game, and full voice long after the game was over, too, which was also very impressive. And the Red Bull fans, too, very, very good atmosphere created by them and the back and forth. Being able to sit in the stands for that with the press box the way it is there just made for a phenomenal, very fun night. Great to be there. Incredible sold-out stadium. It'd be great if we got a stadium up here to have that same atmosphere.
Oh, now you got me on another.
Let's open up another can of worms.
I mean, we can go on all day about that. So
they're making progress. They are. The front office is making progress. They bring in a real DP.
Do you go to Providence?
No, you don't go to Providence. No. You don't go to Providence.
You don't
it's just too small of a market for me. I know that they make it work in Portland. But it was working beforehand. It's not in Providence. You don't hear people talking about their minor league soccer teams there, like they were in Portland, and they had that atmosphere.
Yep.
They had a huge amount of fans in Portland before they were in MLS. It wasn't as many, but they had a great supporting group and all that stuff.
Well, this is a brand that comes back from the NASL days in the 70s. That's why Portland,
exactly.
They already had that grassroots contingency. Here, I think what makes it bad too is that MLS wouldn't want this team in Providence.
No.
Yet alone, Bilello's, I've talked to him many times. He's been on the record, and it's not even just with me. He's been on the record with Villani, a bunch of different radio shows where he's, gone out and said, we want to be on the red line in Boston. We want to,
works for me.
It works out for a lot of people.
Right there.
We want to be able to tap into that market. And the article that was tweeted out, I saw Seth Maycomber again. Seth, shout out. That's twice, buddy. I want a shout out in the next Ben Musket article. the thing about that article that I've only got a problem with is that they talk about how the Revs can be so successful in a small market. I disagree. They could be just as successful in a big time market like this. New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston could be ahead of all three of those cities right now.
Boston has the tons of immigrants that are obsessed with soccer. I don't know how. Obviously, I know why it hasn't been done. It needs to get done because it's a perfect place for soccer. Boston is a city that people from Europe come to and they say, wow, this reminds me of home a little bit. People from Ireland call it Dublin the Second or whatever they want to. It's a beautiful city. There's tons of immigrants. There's tons of different backgrounds in soccer culture and they need to embrace it, and they need to stop trying to embrace. I know there's a lot of Portuguese immigrants in this area, and it's just not working out in that way. And there's still some in Boston. Go to Boston.
Well, they're going to try to hammer home that Portuguese audience. You know that. And I'm not.
Yeah,
I have
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. We're not saying that. And the thing with the reason why the Portuguese audience is so against the Revs, and it's not even that they're against the Revs. They're against MLS.
Yeah,
they're accustomed to a specific style of play, and every soccer fan talks about this, whether you like Premier League, La Liga. Whenever you get into these, go from domestic to international play, whenever you've been set into a specific domestic league for a while, and you have to be forced to watch something else, it's not the same thing, and you don't want to get away from what you got. It's better than, it's like that old saying, the devil you know opposed to the devil you don't, right?
Yeah.
Well, and let's be honest, too. 2-3 years ago, this wasn't a very fun team to watch.
No,
they were losing a lot of games. They weren't
watch.
Playing good soccer. Right now, this is a great team to watch. It's very playing very exciting soccer, winning. You know, if you move this team to Boston and you get some people to come out for the first time and check out a team that's playing this well, I think they'll come back. And you know, you talk about Providence. Boston is the seventh largest media market in the U.S. MLS needs to have a team there. It's like a Providence, the 52nd media market in the U.S. You don't want a professional sports team there. You know, you look at Columbus, they're in the 30s. You look at Portland, they're 22nd. Right. You know, Providence is way below these other supposedly small media markets. It would be insane to put a team in Providence. It's great to have mayors and politicians down there wanting to bring the team down there, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, the private funding thing is also very interesting, because the other part of that article was, you know, the politicians in Rhode Island and Providence are more on board with this thing, supposedly, than the politicians up here. So let's get into politics for a little bit, ladies and gentlemen.
They say that now.
There's some really reputable politicians in Rhode Island.
How much money do they have after the whole Kurt Schilling loans and all that all that disaster?
You know what I mean? It's like, yes, is Providence a young and up-and-coming city? But
sure.
But it's so far behind. And you can even ask the people that live down in that area. Ask Brian O'Connell.
He loves Providence.
Oh, man. I mean, come on.
I'm a fan of Providence. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't make sense
right. I don't have anything against it.
It doesn't make sense for a professional sports franchise. And you can't tell me, you can take the commuter rail down to get there. Nobody's going to. I mean, some people are going to do that, but nobody's going to.
You would
realistic.
Lose so many fans that are already set up with the Revs.
Right. Think about the Maine, the Vermonts, the New Hampshires, those people that got to drive down.
And there's a big fan base from New Hampshire. There's a good group of New Hampshire fans that I'm aware of. I mean, Justin used to come down from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of New Hampshire fans that come down, and going to Providence just makes it that much harder for them to get there. I don't think it's any easier, despite the commuter rail going to Providence. And you have no idea where the stadium is going to be anywhere near the commuter rail if they build it down there.
Commuter rail for 2 hours. But
yeah, despite the commuter rail being down there, I don't think this makes it any easier for people to Boston get there. If anything, harder. So it makes no sense to me. You're better off probably staying in Gillette. Well, maybe you're not, but better off holding off a few more years staying in Gillette to find something that really makes sense in Boston than going to Providence.
Yeah.
No reason to rush.
People have been waiting long. They can wait a couple more years. But something needs to, in order to keep the progression going, from what I've said on this front office, is something needs to come out concrete. Something needs to say, hey, this mayor of so-and-so has the plans on his table. He has to sign off on them, or it has to be, the taxpayers have to vote on it, or something like that. That's the problem with building anything in the state of Massachusetts, is no one wants to pay for it because it's exorbitantly high.
You can't blame them, because we've seen how many disasters lately. I mean, whether it's the Marlins Stadium, what a disaster that was for the taxpayers. Whether it was the Chicago Fire Stadium, what a disaster that was for the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. You can't blame extreme hesitancy for wanting to publicly fund these. I think if the Crafts are going to build this stadium, they're going to have to pay for probably all of it on their own. The Earthquakes did that. The San Jose Earthquakes, they privately financed the stadium completely. I believe the Crafts did with Gillette, too. Didn't they privately finance Gillette completely? So, they're going to have to do that in Boston. It's got to be expensive, but they're going to have to do that, I think, to make it happen.
Actually, the article that I read today, I think that was publicly funded money for Gillette here. So I think that I'm not all accurate. I just don't want to, give anybody, bad answers here.
We're sitting in it.
We're sitting under
your public funds built this chair for me.
We'll have to double check that one. But, I know the Earthquakes are one of the first teams
that completely
privately financed their own soccer stadium. I probably didn't build as big of a one as they would have if they had some public financing and maybe, cut a little bit on cost because of that. But I think that's what the Crafts are going to have to do if they want to get a soccer stadium in Boston. I don't foresee, public financing, especially, the economy is recovering, but it's not – I don't think it's in a place where taxpayers, not to get too political, where taxpayers are going to be supportive of publicly financing a stadium.
Well, on a station like this, it's okay to get a little political here.
That's true.
I would say, though, in just looking at the big grand scheme of things, to go back to something that you just said a couple of seconds ago about, you want to see something concrete. The only reason why I don't think you see anything concrete right now is just because of the state of the situation with everything happening. The on-field play is good. You sign that big name DP. Why stretch for the moon when you only got enough to get you out of the Earth's atmosphere?
I think, and it doesn't have to happen immediately, but it needs to happen before the end of the start of next season. Something needs to happen to keep this wave of people that are
Yeah.
Complete. I mean,
you're right.
It's huge.
Strike while the iron is hot.
It is, exactly. Exactly. Perfect. And you want to make sure that you take advantage of that. And having the hope of a stadium is something that Reds fans will tell you that, you know, they've been so frustrated with it because they'll hear something, but nothing official comes out. No concrete. You know, nothing from the front office they'll say. And a prime example of this is when everyone was talking this year before Jermaine came to the Revs. Everyone says, oh, there's some big player coming to New England. Taylor Twellman reported it or whatever. And then the front office comes out and says, yeah, we're actively pursuing Jermaine Jones. And we're all like, what? You're telling us this? And this is a step forward for this organization. I think the ownership group is embracing it.
It's good to see. It's healthy. It's not even just good for New England. It's good for American soccer. Mm-hmm. Because if you got a hot market like this, and it's not even that this is necessarily a hot market, because even the Celtics, Red Sox, maybe not
Bruins.
The Red Sox as much, but the Celtics, Bruins, and even the Patriots, when the Patriots lose the guy that stands on that door right there and wears the number 12, it's not the most attractive of markets. It's not the most attractive of places to be to begin with. The Red Sox are able to bring in what they are because their fan base is apparently an entire nation.
And money.
And money.
They spend more than most MLB teams.
Thank you very much, John Henry. Outsiders, man. But I would say that it's perfectly built on your point that it's perfectly said by you that, yes, you do have to continue this momentum. You have to continue going down the same road that you've been. Don't just dip your feet in the water. If you know you're gonna start flirting with this stuff, would you say it's time to start actually looking to go diving in a little bit more?
Well, right now, I mean, we talked about the amazing fan support we've seen over the past few games. That's something that you can actually help sell to a city when you're trying to say, you know, this stadium would be good for the city. You know, showing that support, showing that momentum. Imagine if the Revolution, you know, were to go on and win a championship, you know, wow. The momentum that would bring, the attention that would bring to this team that it doesn't usually get. Like, that is the perfect time to really push for a stadium when they're on the front page of the sports, when they're making the headlines, when everybody's talking about them, which, you know, could happen next week with a little bit of luck. So I think now is the time to really push for it, build that momentum. Announcing a stadium or announcing some progress on a stadium, you know, in the next few months or next few weeks, I think would be huge.
That'd be great. And then you think about, too, as we have New York playing in the background to send us out here. We only got a couple more minutes to go, but part of it. It's the right time for everything just to at least have these conversations. It's a good state of things for this franchise. It's a good state of things for this sport. And even more, look at what the conference final setups are. You have New York and New England. You have Seattle and L.A. And regardless of the fact that maybe it's a new thing for American sports fans to see, you've got more of an eye of the national attention on you today. A lot of people are going to be watching Gillette Stadium to see a different type of football game being played where there's not the number 12 on the sidelines.
There's no football lines.
And there is no football lines and no hoodies.
Oh, yeah, no hoodies. No cut-off hoodies.
Might be some hoodies in the stands today with this weather, but not on the sideline.
No, it's going to be gorgeous today.
We'll be toasting the press box.
We will be toasting the press box. It's going to be it'll be some atmosphere. What do you think? What do we got? Is New England going on?
I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw, New England advancing.
2-1 New England.
2-1 New England? I think that one would really set this place on fire. You get two goals on the board today?
I don't think New York has it. I think New England's definitely favorite.
All right. What about LA and Seattle? Wait, what do you got?
I can see New York striking early and the Revs coming back and tying it to make it safe late.
2-0 Seattle.
2-0 Seattle?
Yep.
All right.
Man, that one, I just can't see. That one's just such a tough one to call. I'm gonna go with Seattle somehow pulling it off, but I could see that one going either way. That's gonna be a great game.
All right, New England Soccer Weekly returns next week. We'll see if they're in the finals, the Revs. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Justin. I'm Tom Quinlan. Post game show returns tonight after the game at 5. Peace. And I'm